So I've entitled my message this morning as, "O Lord, what a morning." We left our reflective time here on Friday with empty hands and a real sense of the awfulness Jesus endured on our behalf, the price that he paid to redeem us from sin. Yesterday was a quiet day. Maybe we reflected back on the events of Friday, maybe not. Today, Easter Sunday, a day of rejoicing. We wake up and we sing in our hearts, "Up from the grave he arose." Oh, the singing this morning has been great. But the first Easter Sunday wasn't like that. You may be very surprised that I took the reading from Mark's account, because we're so used to reading this story from the other three Gospels, which give us a very full account of what happened that day and the days after. Whereas Mark ends his Gospel abruptly with very little detail, but detail that needs to be noted. Look at that verse 8, last verse. "So they went out and fled from the tomb, for terror and amazement had seized them. And they said nothing to anyone, for they were afraid." What a strange ending for a story supposed to be good news. Instead of triumph and joy, we encounter confusion and terror. We expect that something good is going to happen when the women find the large stone rolled away, but it doesn't. The angel doesn't announce, "Surprise, here he is." No, he says he's not here. It's a bit of a letdown, isn't it? The women go from the tomb, but they don't go and tell as the angel instructed them. Nor does the angel track them down to reassure them. "It'll be okay, it'll be okay." Confusion also reigns in the other Gospels when news of Jesus' resurrection breaks. In Matthew, some doubt when Jesus appears to the 11. Jesus dispels that doubt by his word of command to go and teach and make disciples. In Luke, the story of the two friends on the road to Emmaus mistake the risen Jesus for a stranger, and they pour out all their anger and disappointment that Jesus didn't turn out to be the Messiah they thought he was. Their eyes were opened only after Jesus breaks bread with them. In John's Gospel, Mary Magdalene confuses the resurrected Jesus for the gardener. Her despair is only allayed when Jesus calls her name, Mary. That first resurrection morning was anything but a joyous occasion to begin with. But by the end of the day, it was for some. But still others doubted. Let's look at the comings and goings of Mary and the other women and see what we can learn from their experiences that day. The first thing we notice is their grief was normal. They came to the grave where they'd buried their Lord. They trod the path that all humanity is treading, that leads to the great separation. The unanswering stillness, the finality of death, the end. Those women making their way to the garden where Joseph of Arimathea had buried Jesus were experiencing what everyone since the world began has felt, who has ever loved, then lost and grieved. Secondly, God's power transformed their fear. The women heard the angel say to them, "He is not here. He is risen." In that moment, they passed from the fear that blinded their eyes, the fear that walks hand in hand with hopeless sorrow, into that other fear, holy fear, a feeling of total awe that something unexplainable had happened. The stone had been rolled back from the mouth of the grave. But the women left the tomb afraid of its emptiness. Can you imagine the 1,001 questions running around in their minds? Who's done this? When? Why? What's going on? Is that an angel in there? How come he knew about it? It's not hard to see how terror and amazement seized them. As we consider these women full of fear, I wonder what our fears are. Have we ever stood, figuratively speaking, at the empty tomb and been transformed by his power? The women in those few moments were transformed in their grief from fear of death to a holy fear, with an awe and reverence for life. Thirdly, the women discovered that God is the God of the living. The angel's words, "He is not here. See the place where they laid him," also tells us there's no reunion with the familiar earthly form of Jesus, with tears of joy and hugs all round. No, Jesus cannot be held captive by death, let alone by a stone. He's free from death, transformed from this earthly existence, and unleashed on the world. The women discovered they couldn't meet him at the place where they laid him. His grave was not to become a shrine like David's tomb or the dressed-up tombs of the prophets. They were to see that the God who raises the dead has no use for earthly memorials. The tombstone was not to become a wailing wall. God is not the God of the dead, entombed in shrines. No, he's the God of the living. Fourth, the women discovered God spoke through an angel, telling them to go where he leads. As we read Mark, we notice that he opened his gospel with a voice from heaven, authenticating Jesus' identity, mission, and authority. At the end, We have only the testimony of a young man whom we can identify as an angel, and the witness of women whose testimony was considered to be invalid, according to Luke's gospel. And they kept silent. Mark gives no evidence that the young man's message is true, except that he reiterates precisely what Jesus said would happen. So all the women have is the news that Jesus has been raised. Then the angel tells the women that Jesus is going ahead of you to Galilee. There you'll see him, just as he told you. If they wanted to see Jesus for themselves, they must leave the tomb and go where he leads, to Galilee, back to the beginning. Or was that back to the future, where one must learn to follow him again? They learnt they couldn't meet the risen Jesus in the place of the dead Jesus. They had to journey to Galilee. If we ask where Christ is, Mark's answer is that he is always on ahead of us, leading us on to new places. Jesus is to be found today in obedience to his command to go. Have we journeyed to where he's told us to go so we can meet him there? If you're wondering why you haven't found the resurrected Jesus yet, maybe you need to leave the place of the dead dreams or the dead work, where you're standing, and journey to where he's calling you to go, just as the women had to. It's scary, it's unknown, but it's worth it. Fifth, and I've only got 6 points. The women discover the power of God over death. Jesus' resurrection reverses the humiliation and degradation of the crucifixion. The God who brought Israel up out of the sea has brought Jesus up out of the grave. God has decisively answered the women's question, who will roll away the stone? Not only from Jesus' grave, but also from ours. Jesus' resurrection destroys the power of death over human beings. To those who don't believe, that seems a huge stone that no one can ever roll away. But to those of us who do believe, we know that death is not the end. It has lost its sting. We could say that the message of Jesus' resurrection transforms a hopeless end into an endless hope. Sixth, and finally, the women's failure is not fatal. Mark's account of the resurrection touches on the problem that fallible humans must live with failure. The women failed to do what they were told, to tell others that Jesus was alive. Remember, the verse said, they said nothing to anyone, for they were afraid. Isn't it true that for many or most of us, the way of discipleship is not a triumphant procession through the world, like a hot knife cutting through butter. It's a way dogged by personal failure after personal failure. It could seem that this gospel ends on a pessimistic note because Mark doesn't report that the women successfully fulfilled their commission. But, and here's the good news, Mark's gospel is not about the disciples' failure. It's about the power of God which overcomes human failure. We know that Jesus' resurrection was proclaimed and is still being proclaimed throughout the world, just as Jesus said it would. This means that God's will and Jesus' promise have been fulfilled despite human failure. This is good news because it means that the story is not dependent on human performance. Just as Jesus' disciples faltered and failed, so do we. Discipleship is established by Jesus' call. Remember, he said, "I chose you and appointed you." Remember, he said those words. And that can only be sustained by God's mercy and power alone, not by self. Everything depends on God, not on our performance. Yes, he needs our willingness, our availability, but the ability is his. Mark's sudden end to his gospel causes us to realise that the resurrection sets in motion a new story that isn't yet finished. It'll be completed at the time of the second coming. So what happens next is up to us, his followers, the believers. We are the next chapter. We are writing the next chapter. Let's take a moment for reflection. What would we have done if we were those first women at the tomb, let in on the tremendous, earth-shattering news of the resurrection? What would we have done? Think about that for a minute. What will we do now that we've been let in on the good news? Will we flee in fear and become silent? Will the story die with us? Will we obediently follow Jesus to our Galilee, or will we hunker down in our safe but maybe dead environment? This resurrection day of celebration, we have so much to rejoice about. The stone of fear has been rolled back from the grave. That God is the God of the living, not the dead. I don't think you're finding this good news at all. He is alive and he goes ahead of where he calls us to go. When we journey with him, we have nothing to fear. That with God, human failure to obey is not fatal. He does forgive. And the message does go on. Finally, God's interested in our availability, not our ability. Isn't that the good news of Easter? Amen?
Amen.